Welcome to Gay USA. I'm Andy Hum.
I'm Ann Northrup.
Did anything happen last week?
Very quiet. Actually, tens of thousands of participants came to the Reclaim Pride Coalition Queer Liberation March for Black Lives and against police brutality in New York. We'll have pictures and we will tell you all about it.
But the police did not let the 50th anniversary of the first Christopher Street Liberation Day march go by without roughing up and pepper spraying marchers in Washington Square.
I was there. It was pretty scary.
And we're also going to tell you about some of the trans lives, black trans lives, that we lost at the top of the show. We'll be talking about that.
Which are a big reason for the march. Many Pride celebrations were held online, including a 24-hour World Pride telecast.
In other news, the U.S. Supreme Court overturned an anti-abortion law, but they're muzzling foreign non-governmental organizations who are doing AIDS work.
They also gave the green light to the death penalty again.
Yes.
Harry Britt, the San Francisco supervisor who succeeded Harvey Milk, has died at age 82.
And Jim Smith, who pioneered LGBT organizing on Staten Island, has died at the age of 79.
Gabon, on the west coast of Africa, has decriminalized same-sex relations.
And in the spirit of the season, lots of celebrities came out this week.
But really, we want to start with the urgent and tragic news of yet more murders of trans people in this country. It's been called an epidemic. It is. And we're seeing numbers of them during Pride Month and all this year. And the numbers are climbing. And we want to highlight these by telling you about them here at the top of the show.
Mercy Mack is the one we just learned about before we went on the air. She's the fourth black trans woman killed during Pride Month alone. 22 years old. This happened in Dallas. Her body was discovered in a parking lot with a gunshot wound to the head. And the 19th this year, the police are investigating. And if you live in the Dallas area, have any knowledge of this, please get in touch with them.
People evidently had heard the gunshot or gunshots and not done anything. But a passerby saw the body in the morning and finally called the police. Look at her, 22 years old and gone. And then in Sherwood, Arkansas, again, an even younger black trans woman, Brayla Stone, murdered at 17.
She was found in a car on a walking path. Someone on social media, I don't know why they would do this, claimed he was paid $5,000 to kill her and did it.
Then he retracted it, I think.
Well, they had a candlelight vigil in Little Rock. Sherwood is right outside of Little Rock for Brayla. And just, what a...
There's no respecter. It's no respecter of geography. This happens all over the country. These stories, Dallas, Arkansas, it happens here in New York. It happens everywhere.
And then in Louisiana, where a young gay man was, there was an attempted murder of Holden White, 18 years old, a gay student there. He's in critical condition, mutilated and left for dead during a grinder date gone wrong. Arrested was a kid named Chance Seneca, 19, charged with attempted second degree murder. The police are not yet classifying it as a hate crime. White's family says he was targeted for being gay. This kid, Seneca, had a photo of Jeffrey Dahmer on his profile picture on Facebook. The men had been texting for a week. Seneca picked him up, tortured him, then called 911 and said he murdered a man. Gruesome injuries, but he managed to survive and is fighting for his life. The FBI is joining the investigation. The mother says that he is getting stronger by the day.
So this is the situation in this country and around the world. We are targets, and particularly Black trans women. But across the board, the hatred, the stigma, the fear of us continues. And so this year for Pride, the Queer Liberation March, of which I'm an organizer and Andy is a member, decided to hold its second annual march. Last year we held our first march. We do not appreciate the over-corporatization of the regular Heritage of Pride march and the involvement of police and many other things. And so we wanted to take Pride marches back to their beginnings, and we held a people's march and recreated the root of the first Pride march. And then this year we were going to do something else. We hadn't quite decided what. The virus, the coronavirus, came along and canceled all big events like this. But when George Floyd was murdered in Minneapolis and the world erupted in protest marches and more stories of people having been killed, we said to ourselves, we must march. We must be in the streets. And so we decided to hold the Queer Liberation March for Black Lives and against police brutality, and to offer it online also as a live stream, and to insist that everybody come with masks.
And everybody did.
Everybody did. As you can see here, even the news cameras or photographers behind the banner holders.
And, you know, you threw this thing together relatively quickly, and tens of thousands of people showed up to participate as safely as we could. And 400,000 people watched this online.
Yeah, so here's one shot of the size of the crowd. Wait, is that... I'm trying to figure out where that is.
That's coming right up from the start of the march from Foley Square, because in the far background is Worth Street and the Health Department.
Right, and that is Foley Square behind. So that's where the march started, and started coming south a couple of blocks to join and honor the Occupy City Hall people who were camping out at City Hall in New York to demand defunding of the police, a cut of the police budget.
And there weren't many contingents, really, but some carried banners. Black HIV Positive Lives Matter was one of them.
Yep. Again, everyone in masks, but no floats, no, corporate involvement.
No cops, except at the end.
Yeah, we'll get to that. Revolting lesbians who have done such a great job going against the patriarchy and the discriminatory rich who have been funding the Museum of Natural History with all their oil and gas money.
And if you don't mind me saying, I just got a note from Anne McGuire from Revolting Lesbians saying they're going to have a march on July the 4th, a march to honor Black and Indigenous lives that's going to be in Fort Greene Park at 2:30 on July the 4th and rallying at 5 o'clock at Prospect Park West and 15th Street. These things go on.
That's all in Brooklyn on the 4th of July, and Anne is with Revolting Lesbians. This was a statue of Marsha P. Johnson constructed by the Reverend Billy and his Stop Shopping Choir. The choir is all around in their black garb. They were fantastic. There were many, many different themes and people in the march, but it was really built around black trans lives. You can see.
I would call that statue of Marsha Saint Marsha.
Okay.
I think
they did too.
Marsha P. Johnson, someone who was on the streets, who was one of the people involved right in the mix of the Stonewall Rebellion in 1969, but who we knew, for years as a drag queen and street person.
So the pictures we just showed you, most of them anyway, were taken by Donna Aceto, the legendary photographer here, who does a lot of the work for Gay City News and other publications. This photo is by a Queer Liberation March Reclaim Pride member, Leandro Justin. I love this picture so much. The energy of the march coming up Church Street from Chambers in Lower Manhattan with the big buildings on the side and just this sea of humanity coming at you. As Andy said, tens of thousands of people. I have sent this picture to many friends saying, this is my favorite. That banner in the front that is sort of semi-obscured, queer as something, the police, it says as queer as in F the police, which is one of my new favorite slogans. But this is the energy that was brought to it. And you see all these Black Trans Lives Matter signs and love and every other stripe of the rainbow. And again, everyone in masks, because everybody took seriously that we are in a dire situation in so many ways, whether it is the lives of all Black people and particularly Black trans people, the virus that disproportionately affects Black communities and brown communities because they're just not in a position to have the same health care or healthy situations. And it was so urgent for us to get out in the streets and spread these messages as it just was inescapable. And so many people came to this march, many knowing exactly what this was about, but many not. There were certainly people who came to this because the regular Heritage of Pride March was canceled, and they thought, oh, let's go to the Pride March. This is the one that's happening. And they came away from this march saying, oh, my God, I didn't realize that the Pride March could be like this, because they're young and they don't remember the early Pride marches. And they said, you know, I'm never going to another corporate march. This is what we should be doing for Pride. This kind of political, meaningful march is where we should be.
Well, we've been saying for years, make the march about something. It's not like our issues are over. Of course we want celebrations, and of course we have achievements every year. But of course, what do? They put the politicians up on the front of the march as if we're paying tribute to them or they're paying tribute to us. No, this has got to be about, I don't know what you plan for the future. You probably don't know what you plan for the future. But it should always be, don't waste this opportunity, because that's the spirit of Stonewall, which was a rebellion, and it's not over. And there we are, marching past the Stonewall on that day.
Yeah. Where are they? That's the Stonewall sign, Pride is a Riot. And that's exactly right. And that is, that spirit, as you say, is what we're trying to recreate. And speaking of politicians, there was that little broadcast, the non-march that Hop did, Heritage of Pride. And there was Chuck Schumer, Senator Chuck Schumer, who was one of the last to support same-sex marriage. And he's standing on that broadcast saying, you know, I was very early to support same-sex marriage. I was right out front there.
I was the first senator to march in a Pride march. I mean, this guy opposed gay rights. I used to come up to him at every Pride march and say, what are you doing here? You don't support our equal rights. You know, I mean, it's just insane. And you know, this is the guy, well, I mean, I would like us to take back the Senate, but he's going to be the majority leader if we do. And he's got to get more spine. He's deluded in his head about his own record. And then they had Cuomo on talking about New York has always been the leader. No, it hasn't. New York passed one of the last gay rights laws. The state was very late. You know, come on. You know, I mean, yes, we've made some progress and that's great, but we're not leaders.
Now, I'm hoping for a revolution in the Senate if the Dems take over and someone running against Schumer for majority leader, someone who's more progressive and courageous.
I mean, I'm all for people coming around on the issues, of course. That's what we want. That's what we're working for. But I want leaders in leadership positions who are going to take us to a great new place. What else?
All right. So do we have other?
Maybe we ought to talk about what happened at the end.
Okay, hold on one second. All right, let's go to that. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I wasn't there for this at the end.
I was.
I conked out after 6 miles of walking, but and this was my first time out to an action like this because I've been nervous about COVID, but we were able to stay distanced and all that. But
all right.
There we are in Washington Square. You.
All right. So what happened was that the march came up Church Street and 6th Avenue all the way to the West Village and the Stonewall Inn. We were supposed to go over to the river, but it was very hot. Everybody was very tired. So we just whipped around, cut out a little of the route, and went straight over to Washington Square Park. Oh, that is Lala Zinnell, who was one of the magnificent speakers at the Speak Out in Washington Square Park, run by Black Trans Media, and just a ton of great speeches and hundreds of people standing around watching and appreciating all of that. And that was very successful. That was a good thing that happened in the park when we got there. But next slide, please.
Daily News. History repeats on the anniversary of Stonewall. Cops clash with pride protesters.
Yeah, leave that there for a second, please, Rich, because we can't show you the video because by doing this show on Zoom these days, we can't roll video in, but I beg you to go to Twitter or go to the note we'll send out to our viewers tonight or tomorrow where we have some links. There is video all over Twitter of this police riot that happened just outside Washington Square Park as that Speak Out was going on. The march came around and headed down the last few blocks of Fifth Avenue into Washington Square Park. And as they were going along, the cops decided that, and this is their story, that they saw some graffiti that marchers had put on a police vehicle. Now, I have seen it.
They took a Sharpie. It could have been Trump. You see his picture there. taking a Sharpie and crossing out NYPD on the back of a
It was about this big. Oh, you can't see my hands. It was about 6 inches across and 3 inches top to bottom. It was a tiny little bit of Sharpie scribbling. So the cops decide to wade into the march and grab the person they think did it. And the marchers go, what? Wait, what's happening? We have no idea what's going on. Stop it. Let him go. Don't arrest him. What are you doing? And then the cops lose their minds. And they come charging in wave after wave of cops who had been waiting around the corner, pepper spraying the marchers, beating them with batons. There you see some marchers being treated for their pepper spray injuries because we had brought along water and milk of magnesia or whatever because they're pepper spraying people all over town and all over the country in these marches. You march against police brutality and what happens? The police get brutal. So it happened here too. Now, this went on for several minutes longer, just a real shoving match between the police and the marchers. The march was so dense that when the police came and tried to enter it, there was just no room for anybody. So there wasn't a question of anybody moving back or anything. It was just everybody together, cops, marchers, the marchers confused because they were totally peaceful. All day had been totally peaceful. And the cops just tried to bust it up and grab people and break up the whole thing. So I happened to have been very close by on 6th Avenue at that point, dealing with traffic gridlock and keeping cars away from marchers. And when I finished that, I could see that there were something was happening a block away. Police were rushing in. There was noise growing. So I just headed straight for it, and I got there, and there's this massive melee, and I'm standing right on the sidewalk. I'm approximately 4 feet from where the cops and the marchers are in this huge shoving match back and forth. And it was terrifying. You know, am I about to get swept up on this? Am I going to be trampled? People were trampled.
And these are the kind of cops who cover their badge numbers.
Yes.
You know, get off the street. It's all about you're not obeying me right now, this second.
And they're running around with their batons, threatening people and hitting them and trying to push them back. One cop reaches out and just slams someone off her bike with a baton. Just wham, no reason at all. She's just standing there with her bike. They really lost their minds. And so I'm watching this. My first reaction is I've got to try to interfere with this and stop it and calm it down. Then I came to my senses about half a second later and realized that, no, I was not going to do that, but I would stand there and watch. I would not leave.
But a lot of the marshals from Reclaim Pride were successful in fending off some of the police action against others.
But the most moving thing happened right before my eyes there, just a couple of feet away. And that was that the marchers were yelling at the cops, go home, go away, get out of here, quit your job, a lot of that. And I saw something I had never seen in my life in all my years of going to demonstrations and marches and all of this. The demonstrators peacefully, not violently, pushed the cops away, and the cops retreated back down to the end of the block. And it was because the marchers so outnumbered the cops. And I've always wondered in life why it is that we who outnumber the powers that be, whether it's politicians, government, or poor people versus rich people, or people of color versus white people, or certainly marchers versus police. We so outnumber them so often, and yet we are oppressed.
Yeah.
And just
why don't we have progressive taxation? Why don't we have Medicare for
all? Exactly. But I, you know, where's the revolution is my real question.
Come on. I mean,
well, the point of my, I think people are divided and conquered and held down, and they have the guns and all of that. But it's just like, it breaks my heart when I see people in large crowds who are unable to overcome the smaller but more powerful forces. And to see these marchers just stand their ground and push back and insist that the police leave was enormously moving and educational, because I hadn't seen that before. And they were mostly young, and they were just determined not to be overrun by the police.
There have been a lot of determined people. There's been a whole encampment down by New York City Hall demanding that the police be defunded. And, you know, what they got out of, because the budget was just settled, had to be by July 1st. And, you know, they're calling it a $1 billion cut. It's just smoke and mirrors and moving things around. And they're all trying to, you know, say it is. But politicians felt they had to respond, even if it was with smoke and mirrors.
But that encampment was also broken up by cops yesterday morning before the vote. The cops moved in and did the same thing they tried to do to the Reclaim Pride March, the Queer Liberation March. They moved in, they moved barricades, they picked up everybody's stuff and threw it away, and they just shoved everybody out and very violently went at them to get them off that territory before the vote happened.
Certainly Pride Day will never be the same again. I hope.
Well, we shall see. I'm not making any predictions, but it was very moving to be in that huge march dedicated to Black lives and against police brutality. It felt so good to be out there doing something meaningful and making that commitment. And then it felt so good to watch those marchers, those young marchers, stand up for themselves and stand up for the communities that they were there to support. And just amazing to watch the police back away. You know, they ended up arresting three guys and charging them with felony assault of a police officer. This is just a put-up job. This is what the police do. The truth is that they were all in this huge crowd together. No one assaulted a police officer. They were just trying to get away from them and get out of there. One of the first rules of demonstrations is you never touch a cop. Well, in this case, no one had any choice because the cops came into the crowd and there was just no way to avoid them. So now the cops are leveling these felony assault charges. But I heard later from one member of our video team who had been in Washington Square Park packing up equipment. And as he was doing that, a new fresh line of cops, because they kept bringing in more and more and more, was marching in from the south side of Washington Square Park to the north side where the melee was. They were going in to reinforce the cops. And in that line, one of the cops said to another, you know, those guys are invincible and they know it. And I thought, wow.
Interesting. When Stonewall happened, you're reminding me that I think it was Allen Ginsberg said, and for a story that was in The Voice the next day, he says, people have lost that wounded look that they had beforehand because they were defiant. And Stonewall shocked the cops. It's just like, wait a minute, you're the people we've been putting down all these years, you know, treating like crap, and you're fighting. It was just a shock to their systems.
I think it was a shock to the demonstrators' systems, too. But Stonewall, after all, was what, five nights of fighting with the cops? Five nights, people came back over and over and over again to fight the cops and hold that territory and fight back and be self-respecting and strong. And that is why it's a turning point, because they defied victimhood. And that is really the message of all of this.
Right. And I should say that the Anti-Violence Project reported that they received 15 reports of police violence from the Sunday.
Just that night. I'm sure there are many, many more. There was pepper spraying. Some of the video that you will see online is of actual pepper spray. Oh, and there were two cops who were hit with pepper spray. And I heard the cops sort of make a sort of, we were hit with pepper spray. And I thought, well, who do you think was using the pepper spray? Not us. You hit yourselves. And I heard about, in fact, one marcher who, about to be pepper sprayed, held up a Queer Liberation March poster, and the pepper spray hit the poster and went back onto the cop. That's how they got pepper sprayed.
Well, we should say that, cops, people in authority rarely face consequences. For instance, in the Lailene Polanco case, this is a young transgender woman, 27 years old, who died on Rikers Island in custody, had seizures, and they isolated her. Well, there have been some. Darcel Clark in the Bronx, who's the DA, wouldn't indict anybody over this, but they are going to discipline 17 people from the corrections department, they say, over this. So they've started those proceedings. And they say we're going to end segregation, isolation,
solitary
confinement to avoid this in the future.
Corey Johnson, our city council speaker and representative here and out gay and out HIV positive, tweeted that there must be an investigation of the cops' attack on the march. Of course, he's coming under fire for agreeing to a budget that people think is inadequate. There were reports of cops hitting people in the ankle with batons to knock them down, and of people being pushed to the ground and held under a cop's knee. Where have we heard that before? You'd think they'd learn their lesson. Let's see what else. There were just stupid stuff. The news media, some of them got it very right, used a lot of video, had terrific stuff. New York One, however, the local news TV station, said there were dozens of marchers.
Well, the Times said 1,000. There were clearly tens of thousands. We were there.
Well, we showed you the pictures. To which I reply, yes, there were dozens, plus about 40,000.
Now, can we move on?
Almost. Beverly Hills held a peaceful march against police violence. In Minneapolis, 1,000 people marched for pride and justice reform.
Well, San Francisco had a Pride as a Riot march that honored LGBTQ, Black Lives Matter movements. That protest filled three city blocks.
And in celebrity news, I ran into Cynthia Nixon and Christine Marinoni, her wife, at the march. And I heard Chelsea Manning was there, too.
Okay.
Sorry, I didn't run into her.
So most of these things were moved online because most cities did not permit marches, pride marches.
We didn't have a permit.
So this was a protest march. It wasn't a parade.
Right.
But they did 24 hours of World Pride, and when I came home from the march, I watched some of it. I mean, some of it was cheesy, entertainment kind of things, which is all right. I'm sure some people enjoy that. But to see activists from Egypt and Palestine and, other African countries and all over the world, these are people who risk their lives in many cases to do their work. And they were all there just for, a couple of minutes, segments, talking about what the work that they're doing. That was pretty impressive.
Well, in fact, there was a march in London. They weren't supposed to have a big march either, but our pal Peter Tatchell led a group of veteran Pride activists.
Gay Liberation Front people who organized the first one there in 1972, and they wanted to march again. And that's Peter in the middle there with the GLF, Gay Liberation Front veterans. There were about 12 of them and then some others marching behind them. But there was also a separate Black Lives Matter protest that marched right through central London.
Most
3,500 marched. Israel had thousands who held what they called muted pride events. And then Spain.
Yeah.
Well,
in Spain, a couple of things. Marches canceled, prides canceled. But this is from a town called Aguilar de la Frontera, where 14 older women who have fibromyalgia and are quarantined because of the virus crocheted this 170-foot rainbow flag. Fantastic.
Well, but is this the same town population, 4,000, that they banned the rainbow flag at City Hall, so people started to bring out rainbow
flags? No, that's a different town, Villanueva de Algaidas, A-L-G-A-I-D-A-S. The mayor of the town found it was illegal to fly anything but a Spain flag. I think this has to do with the Basques. So the town villagers had given to them by a flag salesman 300 plus rainbow flags, and they flew them all over town.
Are you all sitting down? The U.S. Embassy in Moscow flew the rainbow flag, as did the U.K., and a local official there, and they were trying to affirm the dignity of all and called on the Russian Federation to protect the rights of all, including the LGBT community. A Putin spokesperson said any propaganda of non-traditional sexual minorities is prohibited by law. But there were a whole bunch of diplomats that signed this letter from,
The U.S., the U.K., Australia, Canada, New Zealand all signed demanding LGBT rights.
In the Philippines, they cracked down on LGBT protests using COVID as an excuse, just like in New York a month ago. 20 were arrested in Manila. And in Taipei, Taiwan, hundreds gathered in the capital for a pride event, unfurling a giant rainbow flag in front of a memorial to Chiang Kai-shek. Some shouting obscenities about him because he was a despot who killed his opponents and things.
And partly this was because Taiwan has very little coronavirus at the moment, so they were sort of doing this.
They did a good job on it. Unlike the United States, we are going down. I guess you know that.
We do, and we can't fly anywhere, so we're stuck. they were also representing China and other places that people couldn't be out. And there was one other I had here. What is it? Never mind.
Let's get to the Supreme Court.
Oh, Israel. Four cities in Israel also had unofficial pride human rights marches. Yes, Supreme Court.
So the Supreme Court did overturn a draconian anti-abortion law in Louisiana with Justice Roberts, similar to the Texas law that he had upheld in 2016. But he said, now that's a precedent, and so we got to uphold that. And the one bit of news about this is it might bode well for the precedent of Obergefell and Windsor, the marriage decisions of not of him, even though he voted against those, that it might for now.
Well, the other thing that's getting a lot of notice is this thing about state money can go to religious schools. Now, the decision here said states do not have to give money to private or religious schools. But if they give money to private schools, then they also have to make money available to religious schools.
So I'm wondering what's going to happen. And we do a lot of that in New York, by the way. This isn't just, this was a, what was this, an Idaho case?
I don't think so, but I have to. No, I think it was, I want to say Minnesota.
Anyway, but the point is, all right, so they're saying you can't discriminate just because they're religious. But what if the government said in the state, okay, we will give money to schools, but any schools that we give money to must not discriminate based on race, religion, sexual orientation, etc. And if you can't accept those terms, you don't get it. And I'm not talking about complying with the human rights laws, because the human rights laws have all kinds of religious exemptions. So I wonder if that would be upheld. But that's kind of going to be tested in the case that's before the court that's going to be heard next term about the Philadelphia Catholic Adoption Services.
You took the words right out of my mouth. Right. And the other Supreme Court decision was allowing reinstatement of the federal death penalty. That's not fun. The other federal thing is that Trump issued an executive order.
We're not done with the court, because they also ruled 5-3 that foreign NGOs have First Amendment.
Well, I was saving that for AIDS news, but go ahead.
Well, it's Supreme Court. They're saying you've got to comply with a federal rule that says if you get money, you've got to have policies against sex work. And it inhibits a lot of these groups, because when they're doing HIV/AIDS work, they're not going to condemn sex work. They work with sex workers. That's one of the ways they control it. U.S. NGOs were given First Amendment rights to sort of speak out against this, but not foreign ones. But the foreign money comes through the U.S. NGOs, so it's a gag rule, basically.
Well, the U.S. organizations have foreign affiliates, but those affiliates are now gagged and cannot do what their U.S. Organizations do. But all of this started in the Bush administration. The world created the Global Fund against AIDS and tuberculosis and malaria, and it was a great organization putting money all over the world. But the United States wanted its own thing and its own control. They didn't want to work with other countries. And the evangelicals wanted a heavy hand in this. So they created PEPFAR, the president's emergency whatever, that everyone just, they cry over it, how wonderful PEPFAR is, and isn't Bush great for creating this? Well, it was created because they didn't want to work with other countries. They wanted to be able to have their own rules, like we're not giving money to any organization that works with sex workers. So for all these years, that has been a problem, and it's one reason we haven't made more progress against HIV in Africa, because that is a large part of the population you have to deal with, and the U.S. won't do it.
Now, the Republicans were also celebrating their 200th Trump judge confirmed, which is horrifying. And the last one was this guy, Corey Wilson, who's so hostile to black voting rights and things like that. But I read a very optimistic article which said two things. First of all, conservatives, they're pretty pissed off these days. They didn't get gay rights. They didn't get abortion. And of course, Trump is probably going to run now saying, I need more justices if we're going to overcome Roberts and Gorsuch isn't right all the time. So that's what he'll be saying. But what they're pointing out is, you know, in the hopes that Trump is going to lose, Democrats are going to come in. They're not going to have the filibuster either. They can confirm all kinds of judges too and rebalance the courts, if only.
One thing I read was that the Republicans are now trying to get Clarence Thomas to resign from the Supreme Court, lickety-split, so they can put a younger justice in there.
If Ruth Bader Ginsburg dies on January 19th, they're confirming someone for that spot.
On the 20th.
All right. Okay.
Senate. So Trump signed this executive order urging states to partner with religious foster care agencies. Let's really put in that state public money to work with discriminatory religious agents.
The senators wrote to the Department of Justice, Bill Barr, and said, you know, Jeff Sessions, your predecessor, said you can't cover transgender rights. Well, you can now under employment. So please rescind that order.
Wasted ink.
Can we talk about some of the people that we've lost this week?
Okay.
Non-violent deaths. Harry Britt. Now, Harry was the successor to Harvey Milk in 1979, appointed by Mayor Dianne Feinstein. He's died at the age of 82. He was elected to 4 terms on the board and served 2 years as president. Even Feinstein said he was a progressive before the word was in vogue. Now, when a congressional seat opened up in 1987, somebody died, he ran for it, and he got 32% of the vote, but Nancy Pelosi got 36% of the vote. He was the progressive candidate. By the way, when Dan White, the assassin of Milk and Mayor Moscone, got a light sentence and gay people rioted on White Night, Harry said, Harvey Milk's people do not have anything to apologize for. Now the society is going to have to deal with us, not as nice little fairies, but as people capable of violence. We are not going to put up with Dan White's anymore. So that's sort of in the spirit of the day. He was a Methodist minister, by the way, and had been married to a woman. But, you know, Harvey Milk actually named him as one of 4 possible successors. That would be Harvey kind of figured he was going to get killed and named him. Now, he also passed the domestic partner legislation there, but the first one he passed in 82 was vetoed by Feinstein. But he
Feinstein.
Was
Dianne Feinstein.
All right, Feinstein. Let's call the whole thing off.
He was described as fearless and as a moral compass, carried on with the tradition of Harvey. And so it's sad to see him go. We also lost another fundamental activist, Jim Smith, from Staten Island, died at 79. Also a fearless activist.
COVID, by the way.
Yes, COVID. So tell us about Jim.
Well, he fought against the exclusion of LGBT groups from the Staten Island St. Pat's Parade. He was a lifelong Staten Islander. This is the most conservative borough of New York. It's getting better. He organized in 1984 a group called Lambda Staten Island. He organized the Pride Community Center, the Staten Island Pride Parade. He was one of the chief organizers. He organized protests when gay veteran Jimmy Zappalordi was murdered there in 1990. He organized Dignity Staten Island, and he ran the Miss Staten Island pageant. That's one of the things he did. He wrote regularly on LGBT issues for the Staten Island Advance. Great guy.
Yeah. In California, in Ojai, California, Paul Fortune, 69, very well-known interior designer, somewhat an interior designer to the stars, but he also was the one who first put the Cadillac through the wall of the Hard Rock Cafe as a design element, and did a lot of other wacky stuff, but also a classic interior designer.
And the poet Kenneth Pitchford, 79 years old, a founding member of the male effeminist movement, they called it, and self-described gay husband of radical feminist Robin Morgan. His poetry was once set to music by Ned Roram, including Song for Lying in Bed During a Night Rain.
All right. And yes, we talked about Lean. Royal Oak, Michigan. We'll move on to a little religious news. St. John Fisher Chapel has fired its lesbian music director of long standing, Terry Gonda, because she's married to Kirsty Reeve. The church knew about it for years and was actually a very welcoming church. And the pastor there did not want to fire Terry. But the Detroit Archbishop, Alan Bisseron, is very ambitious. And he is currently the vice president of the U.S. Council of Bishops. And he wants to move up to be the president. And so he has ordered all these draconian things around Detroit in his archdiocese. And one victim of this is Terry Gonda as the music director.
She wasn't making much money to begin with there. And she's doing it as a volunteer. She's hanging in with the Catholic Church. A lot of people, you know, this guy is against, this bishop is against, he says, if you have same-sex attraction, he invites you to repentance and conversion. And, of course, most people do convert to Episcopalianism or atheism. But she's hanging in there as a volunteer.
And 200 people showed up to demonstrate on her behalf after this happened. But I am very fond of another story from Michigan this week. There's a new president of the Western Michigan University Law School, a guy named James McGrath. And in an interview around his installation as president, he talked about his background, including his membership in ACT UP New York and all the actions he was part of. Now, does this look like an ACT UP New York member?
Sure.
But he worked with the Power Tools affinity group, which did things like chain themselves to the balcony of the New York Stock Exchange and blow air horns just before the opening bell. And they went down to North Carolina and chained themselves inside an office at Burroughs Wellcome Pharmaceutical Company and had to be gotten out of there by the cops using chainsaws to take them out. And he told all these stories. He was in Rhode Island when all this started. He eventually came to New York. But in Rhode Island, he got them to do a campaign against mandatory HIV testing in Rhode Island. So they went to the border of Rhode Island and Connecticut, and they have a big billboard, you know, welcome to Rhode Island. So ACT UP Rhode Island added to that, welcome to Rhode Island, home of mandatory HIV testing. And now he's the president of the Western Michigan University Law School.
I'm going back to some religious news. The Archdiocese of Indianapolis, which gets $40 million in state education funding, issued a document that calls hormone therapy or transition surgery for trans people mutilation and not morally justified. Students who transition may not be eligible for enrollment. Only students who enter conversion therapy can stay.
Has anyone heard the phrase self-determination lately?
Oh, please.
In Elizabeth, New Jersey, Celine Da Silva, 19 years old, had been reading up on history and knew about Marsha P. Johnson and then realized that Marsha P. Johnson was from Elizabeth, New Jersey. So Celine started a petition and got 43,000 signatures to replace the statue of Christopher Columbus in Elizabeth, New Jersey, with a statue of Marsha P. Johnson.
It's about time.
Well, it may.
In Arizona, this is something, you know, sign up for our email list. Go to gayusatv.org. You can sign up for our email list and you get these extras. Because I'm going to give you a link to this. At Luke Air Force Base in Arizona, they had their first LGBTQ pride flight, and 12 News did a report on it. And they featured, you know, a major and a captain who were gay and their boyfriends and their kids. And it was just, I don't know, given the fact that this was such an uptight area of life for so long, to see that and everybody applauding, it's wonderful.
Don't tell the commander-in-chief.
Colorado National Guard as their first woman and first out LGBTQ leader, Army Brigadier General Laura Clellan, appointed by out Governor Jared Polis to take command in August. In civilian life, she works for the Fish and Wildlife Service in Lake.
And in New York, Governor Cuomo has signed something that says LGBT veterans who got dishonorable discharges can, in fact, apply for restored benefits as veterans.
And this is a bad golf story. In Oakland, California, the LGBTQ Center had their window smashed by somebody with a golf club.
Some guy on a bicycle came by with a golf club and started smashing windows. But the National Association of Social Workers has named it Social Worker of the Year, and it is a Latinx trans man, Xander Keeg, who is a military veteran and works with trans people in the military.
Okay, international news?
Yes, quickly.
In Canada, a football player was fired for doing anti-gay tweets. I mean, just fired. They wouldn't put up with it. His name was Christian Jones there in Edmonton.
And we told you about the discriminatory behavior of the Museum of Human Rights in Winnipeg, Canada. Well, the CEO has now resigned, accused of sexual harassment by the staff and racism, too.
In Russia, they cracked down on demonstrations. So 30 people, mostly women, tried to stage something for LGBT rights by spreading out individually. They were all arrested. They're protesting a woman who faces 6 years in prison for what they're calling spreading pornography on Facebook, which just means showing gay images.
Julia Sepkova, we've talked about her, children's books with gay themes. That's what they accused her of, distributing porn. Oh, big news in Poland. They're going to have a runoff election for the presidency. The heinous bigot current president did not get half the votes.
And he got 41%, and the mayor of Warsaw got 30%. So the runoff is July the 12th. Trump tried to prop up Duda at the White House. It doesn't seem to have worked.
And in Gabon, we told you the lower house had voted to decrim homosexuality. Now the Senate has joined them, and the president will sign the bill.
In Ireland, we're losing the gay Taoiseach prime minister, but he stays in the government because it's a coalition government, and he may come back in a couple of years if he's still head of the party.
And in 2019 in Spain, 5,000 plus marriages of same-sex couples, 3.1% of all marriages in Spain.
And in London, the British Museum is adding the Rosetta Stone to the LGBT tours because the guy who deciphered it, or one of the keys to deciphering it, was a gay guy who had to flee the country because he was caught having sex in the Green Park in 1841.
Wait, but do we like the Rosetta Stone being in the British Museum? Shouldn't it be back in...
We're going to start throwing blood. I don't know.
All right. Well, we're not quite as short as I thought we were. But
five and a half minutes. And should we go to entertainment news?
If you're ready.
Well, we had an uptick in celebrity comings out. Actor Ben Aldridge of Fleabag, here pictured with Olivia Colman and Phoebe Waller-Bridge. He also plays Bruce Wayne, Batman's father Thomas, on Epix's Pennyworth. He said the journey to pride has been a long one. These people take a while, as did Nikki Blonsky, 30.
Well, wait, I was just going to say that Ben Aldridge joins Andrew Scott, who was the hot priest on Fleabag, in coming out.
Andrew's been out forever.
Okay.
You know. Nikki Blonsky, 31, the star of the Hairspray movie. She was nominated for a Golden Globe for that. She came out as lesbian in an I'm coming out TikTok dance video.
Well, let's also remember there was an original Hairspray movie that was, what's her name, the John Waters movie.
Well, this was the musical.
Yes, exactly.
Yes.
But congratulations to Nikki. And Taylor Schilling of Orange is the New Black, pictured here with her girlfriend Emily Ritz, they announced that they are a couple.
There's a bisexual Piper Chapman on Orange is the New Black. Ritz is a visual artist. Schilling has avoided questions about her sexuality in the past. She said, "There's no part of me that can be put under a label." That was 2017. Times have changed.
Exactly. Well, I must say I'm finding myself less compelled by these stories. That I'm celebrity culture is That's down on my list.
It's the way a lot of people relate to a lot of these things. And they find out, look, certainly when Ellen came out, it changed the world.
Did it?
Yes. It actually lowered the age at which it was such a big story. I'm not praising or anything about it. That story lowered the age when kids actually could recognize in themselves who they were by like 2 years.
Well, I remember that time and how the age has gone down in terms of people's ability to come out. I would have said it preceded her by some, that she may have been in the middle of that and certainly been part of it.
Well, but Magic Johnson, accelerated AIDS consciousness in the country so much.
Yes. And when Magic Johnson came out as having HIV, ACT UP was very active at the time. And someone in ACT UP who worked for a publishing company called me one day and said, they want him to write a book about HIV for kids or young people anyway. And the publisher can't figure out what to do and how to do this. So we had a long conversation about it. And he then said, I got it. I know how to do this. And so they wrote this book with Magic about HIV for kids. And it was very honest and straightforward. And they published it. And it got banned at every Kmart and Walmart and everything around the country because it was too honest.
Well, we want to alert you to some things. Oh, we're going to give you a lot of web bonuses this week in our email. So go to gayosatv.org and sign up for our email. On the QLM March, we've got some articles, an interview with Chris Cooper on Good Morning America. We have a link to that. And
Chris was at the march.
We met Pride Celebration. And I wasn't going to mention this, but, Ann and I were on a power list.
Oh, please.
Now listen to why I'm talking about this. We're on a power list by city and state of 100 LGBT people. But they don't have a picture of us. It just says they have a pull quote, and it says, Hum and Northrop brought attention to Christian Cooper, the Central Park bird watcher. That's our claim to fame.
Well, first of all, we didn't bring attention to him.
Melody Cooper did. His sister put that up on.
Yes. And yeah. It would have been nice if they'd said Chris Cooper, their colleague, as guest co-host of Gay USA.
We love
the online version had our picture.
Yes. By the way, on July the 10th at 8:00, BroadwayCares.org. An evening with Bernadette Peters from 2009 is going to be live streamed with some commentary. Michael Urey, check that out. We'll provide the link to that in our email, but you can go to BroadwayCares.org about that. It's only at July 10th at 8:00.
And if you want to learn more about the Queer Liberation March, first Google it. It's all over the news. And go to ReclaimPride.org.
Happy Christmas.
Reclaim Pride, ReclaimPrideNYC.org.
Happy Christopher Street Liberation Month is over.